Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:13 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 4th. I thought we'd kick off with the ARK Innovation ETF because it's now right back in the region of the lows from March and the region of the trend mean. And if it's going to find support, this is exactly where it needs to happen. And it did close off the lows, so at least there's at least tentative evidence that there's some dip buying going on. But when we think about just how much it went up in 2020, then at least some consolidation is warranted. And that was an awfully big downward dynamic right off the peak. So we have type 2. We have type 1 acceleration, type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing trend, right-hand extension, right in the region of the trend mean now. So if we're going to avoid a clear signal of type 2 top formation completion with right hand extension, it's going to have to bounce and bounce in a dynamic manner and do it soon, and really realistically this week. We've also seen that the IPO ETF has also come back into the region of the trend mean. There's still the sequence of higher reaction lows. We see also a pretty similar pattern overall. We have more back history for the IPO ETF, but the size of the acceleration is pretty similar overall. And then of course there are the SPACs. Now the reason I'm focusing on this particular portion of the market is simple enough. We've had a profound move, and the parallel between the surge in demand for stay-at-home businesses during the pandemic is very similar to the hysteria that accompanied Y2K back in 1999. It does not necessarily mean that we're at the top of a speculative mania in a manner similar to what we had in 99, but there is no denying that particularly the cloud portion of the speculative market has pulled forward sales from years in the future. It's virtually impossible for them to grow at the same pace in 21, 22, or 23 that they did in 2020. So that at least holds out the prospect that we're going to see deeper processes of consolidation, longer periods of convalescence, and the cloud ETF has held up better than the IPO ETF, and it was off its lows in here today. So we may yet see some additional steadying in here as well. But then we can think about what's happening in terms of the very large companies, and they all pulled back over the last 3 days, and that was following very impressive earnings. So we're back in the region of the trend mean for Amazon. Apple has also pulled back in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today, so back again in the region of the trend mean. If history is any guide, then this is going to represent a buying opportunity, and particularly when we think about what was the catalyst for this pullback we saw on the NASDAQ in here today, where at one point it was down in excess of 2%, but then closing the day well off the lows. And it was Janet Yellen talking about the potential that the spending measures that are being proposed by the administration she's a part of will result in somewhat modestly higher interest rates. That understating of the inflationary pressures was certainly exaggerated in the eyes of investors in here today, because everybody can see what's happening in terms of the ways in which companies are dealing with inflationary pressures. Input prices for everything in the physical world is rising at a rather rapid rate. The LME Metals Index has been resurgent. This kind of acceleration that we continue to see in the metal prices is very representative of the kind of move we saw in, or have seen so far at least, in the speculative area of the market. But this is much more to do with supply inelasticity meets rising demand. Then we can think about the very unique circumstances that are contributing to this incredible acceleration in lumber prices, and it was up its limit again in here today. What I find particularly interesting is that the open interest in the market is in fact declining. And about a month ago, it was at about 3,000 contracts in open interest. Now it's not very far away from 2,000. So the liquidity in the market is decreasing as the price surges higher. Well, when we see these kinds of accelerations in limit controlled markets, when it goes limit down, and we saw an instance of that in late April, then that's usually a sign that there's a change underway. But we would need to see follow through on the downside. And until we see that, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, despite the pace of this incredible advance. Then yesterday, when we think about the inflationary pressures, yesterday we had a pretty impressive move on silver, and then it gave up a good portion of that in here today, but again closed off its lows. And gold is a similar story. It was up about $25 yesterday and then gave up some of the advance in here today. What I find particularly interesting is there is now a considerable difference between an exponential moving average, which is what I have on this chart, and a simple moving average, which I have on this chart. So what this is telling us is that we've already had a reversionary move if we simply incorporate the most recent data. And $1,800 is a big psychological level for a lot of investors. And we've had a $100 rally from the lows put in March and April. So this is the decision point for a lot of investors. If gold can push back above $1,800, I think then we will have pretty good evidence that the lows are in. And if it fails here, and most particularly in a dynamic manner, then we'd have to hold out, or at least give some credence to the view that it could fall back towards 1600. When we think about the measures that people are taking to try and hedge themselves against inflation, well, limited supply arguments like gold obviously are front and center, and not least because it's not one government that is intent on devaluing their currency. We are in a world of competitive currency devaluation. So I will put up the Bloomberg Dollar Index because it's got more currencies in it, and particularly the renminbi and the Indian rupee. It was steadier in here today, so still holding this sequence of higher reaction lows from the region of the lows back in 2018. But it at a minimum would need to sustain a move above the 200-day moving average to question that we're not still in a supply-dominated environment. And the reason it's steadying is because Europe is back in a recession, and there are a number of countries in Europe that are now contracting again. And that's a rather, I think, data-driven and base effect way of looking at the market, because obviously we had a profound decline in the second or the first quarter of last year, and then Europe rebounded for a while because it exhibited relative strength compared to the USA, but subsequently it has lagged in terms of its vaccine rollout. So the economy has not performed on a year-over-year basis, quarter-to-quarter, as well as it did last year. But that's certainly something that the rest of the world is starting to look at. Now, one thing that's clear is that we're going to have a lot of loopy data coming through over the course of the next 6 months because of the year-over-year comparisons. And at the moment, it's negative for the euro because of the year-over-year comparison with the economy and where Europe was this time last year with relative to where it is today. Whereas that exact same comparison is flattering the recovery in the USA. And we're seeing exactly the same thing coming through in other countries as well. And then, of course, we can think about China, where the costs of exports are increasing. There is still a shortage of workers. You had the Chinese government scrambling last week to overturn an international determination that the economy contracted, And they said they needed a couple of extra days to come through with their data, which confirmed that the size of the population is in fact increasing. But the reality is that factories are having difficulty finding workers. The workers that are coming are demanding more money. Mrs. Tracy, on the WeChat group from her former school, there was one parent was complaining that her son had been a champion physics Olympiad participant at the boarding school he was at in the UK for the last 4 years, and he had applied to all the top universities in the UK. He was eventually disallowed from participating, and he tried also having been refused at Cambridge and Imperial. He was finally told that it was in national security interests that he would not be afforded a place in the physics program. So we're definitely starting to see a change coming through in how the rest of the world views the threat from China. And of course, this is falling most acutely hard on young people, where the future of previous generations was open-ended. The future of current generations is going to be curtailed by this increasing geopolitical tension that China has with the rest of the world. And that was the first instance I'd heard of, at least, of people falling victim to this rising tide of tension with China. The renminbi has been closed since April because of Golden Week. So we're not going to have a lot of data coming out of China for the next week because of the May Day holiday. When we think about everything that's going on in India, well, the pace of the advance in cases is moderating. So that should help to support the economy. The Nifty, having been firmer yesterday, was weaker in here today. I think it is likely we're going to see a further reversion towards the mean, but the continued support from monetary and fiscal authorities is likely to continue to act as a tailwind for the wider economy. As we think about the potential for inflation, well, it should favor commodity producers, and it should also favor the kinds of companies that will benefit from migration and definitely from trade surpluses. It was trade surpluses that really made emerging markets attractive in the decade up from the lows in 2000. And as we look at who are going to be the beneficiaries from rising geopolitical tensions, it'll be other countries in Asia and perhaps also Mexico, where we also have a large manufacturing sector very much oriented to the USA. And the Mexican peso is also back in the region of the 20 area. It is starting to pull back from there, and we should see probably some consolidation. Then we can think about Vietnam, where there has been a clear bounce from the upper side of that underlying range, and this continues to look like a bull market overall. I think it's also worth reminding ourselves that if we just look at sufficient back history, this is a consolidation above the previous peaks. So it does look likely that Vietnam is going to come through as a clear winner from the migration of manufacturing away from China, and not least because Chinese costs are rising. So anything that's cost sensitive for labor or labor intensive will be migrating and will continue to migrate. This is a trend that's been going on now for a decade already, and it's going to pick up pace. As we think about the inflationary pressures, consumer staples continue to consolidate here in the region of the upper side of their underlying range as well, and it remains a consistent trend overall. When we think about the relative advantages of the dividend aristocrats, then the Dividend Aristocrat ETF continues to push on the upside. We've had significant contraction in dividend yields, so it now yields about 1.64%. And back in the period towards 2020, we had the spike higher for a while, but the reality here is that we're unlikely to see the yields on Dividend Aristocrats exceed 3%. We can see that it got up to about 2.5% for a couple of times, but it very seldom increases beyond that. And that's equally true of the 3% level for large numbers of the Dividend Aristocrats internationally. The Nestlé yield right now is 2.5%, and it really doesn't generally tend to get very much beyond 3.5%. We can go all the way back to 2000, and every time it gets anywhere close to 3.5%, it's bought. And this is quite similar to a large number of the Dividend Aristocrat companies. So they are adept at altering their service in order to compensate themselves for inflationary pressures. The way that Mars shrinks the size of its bars is well documented, and they continue to do that. I certainly remember as a child that a Mars bar was considered a full meal, and that certainly couldn't be said today. Then we can think about the fact that Costco is now selling paper towels with 140 leaves rather than 160. So they're insulating themselves both from higher lumber prices and paper prices, but also they are altering their product offering because of inflationary pressures. So while we can definitely think about how consumer staples generally have a well-tried and tested strategy for combating inflationary pressures, how does a company like Microsoft do that? So they can adopt a subscription business model, and they've done that already. So the only way that they can then improve their margin again would be to find a way to increase the price. So that's certainly one thing. They could introduce a brand new product segment, which would also help to improve margins. But the reality is it's more difficult for software companies to raise prices than it is for consumer staples to decrease the size of their offerings and simply charge the same price. One is obviously inflationary, the other is a stealth inflation. And we have plenty of examples of stealth inflation right now. But now we also have the push factor that prices coming out of China are increasing. There is no doubt that with shipping prices pushing higher, input prices pushing higher, and wage prices pushing higher, then the Baltic Dry Index is clearly now breaking up and out of this relatively long-term base formation. The oil price was also firmer in here today, up another dollar, so pushing up towards the $70 area, and there's a clear sequence of higher reaction lows. And obviously, getting up towards $80, it's going to create a lot more supply coming into the market, but this continues to look like a reasonable trend overall and potential for additional upside. Of course, we have the prime secular bull market contender in copper, and copper prices are pushing on to new high ground and establishing themselves above the 450 cent level. So there is the clear scope that we are going to see copper breaking out to new all-time highs in the not-so-distant future. This is where the clearest supply and elasticity meets rising demand argument resides. And I think with that, I will leave you for. I should say, I do tend to forget about Bitcoin when I'm doing these broadcasts. It might be just a topic of habit. So before I leave you, I do want to highlight that Bitcoin has pulled back by $2,700 today. And I find this to be rather interesting. The kind of enthusiasm we continue to have for cryptocurrencies is really quite profound. And we saw that Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger were both talking about the mania and the I think really the best way to summarize what they were saying is that the markets still abide by the law of the jungle. And when it looks like the zebras are getting the better of the lions, then you'd really better watch out. And when you hear about things like Dogecoin, or when it originally came out, it was called Doggycoin, then this is a joke in terms of its ability. When you have people talking about that it's going to have, in fact, real utility, this is really risible. And it's a perfect example of the fact that markets thrive on contradiction, and manias in particular thrive on contradiction. And any kind of nonsensical argument sounds attractive to people who have adopted the bullish mantra. Because if you are buying Bitcoin today, you have to believe that it is going to $200,000, because it's not worth buying it if you don't believe that. So it's encouraging more and more people into the market, and yet the price is falling. We've had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. The trend is in no way consistent any longer. This looks like a lower high. And it's encountering resistance in the region of the 50-day moving average instead of bouncing from it. This looks like a completing top formation. And then when we think about Ethereum, well, Ethereum peaked after Bitcoin in 2018, and now it has surged higher over the last 10 days, going from about 2,000 to 3,500. It was well off its high in here today. So I do wonder whether we haven't just seen the peak for Bitcoin, for Ethereum. If Bitcoin follows through on the downside tomorrow, then it's going to take Ethereum with it. So what happens in the next 24 hours in cryptocurrency markets is going to be particularly relevant. If Bitcoin's down another couple of $1,000s tomorrow, then that is really going to try the patience of institutional investors. And if we see a meaningful pullback, and so far we've had a sharp pullback, but if this trend up off the lows in March is finally broken for Bitcoin, well, then it's unlikely to really be avoided that we're going to have a deeper process of consolidation on stock markets as well. So we're certainly at a rather interesting juncture. I have to say, I'm rather tempted to short Ethereum again, but I think I would like to see at least one day on the downside before doing so. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today. I wish all the best to all of you.